This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show.
Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walter Thiessen, here with my wife Louise, my brother Mark, and my sister-in-law Ioana on this Thursday, April 2nd, 2015. And today we thought we would talk about the physical side of the law of attraction, specifically how to use activity and exercise and things that we do in order to get ourselves into a good frame of mind so that we can, attract the stuff we want to attract into our lives. And toward that end, we're going to start by turning to our resident scientist, Ioana, to talk about the science behind activity and feeling good. Ioana.
Yes, and this is a great topic because, it's one of the things that you can do that doesn't cost anything. You don't have to consult with anybody. You don't really need, instructions per se. You can just get outside and walk. Or you can even stay inside and walk, depending on where you are.
You mean this doesn't come with written instructions? Oh, no.
No, actually, because it's something you actually already do every day. You just have to do a little bit more of it with purpose and intention.
Ah.
But, yeah, because exercise is described by some of the gurus as an accelerator of the law of attraction.
An accelerator?
Yes. So if you want to accelerate what you're doing and what's happening in your life with regards to law of attraction, one of the ways to do that is to incorporate regular exercise. And because one of the things that exercise does, it releases the feel-good hormones. And that's what LOA is all about. It's all about feeling good and having that good positive energy, getting to that good vibration, because that's how you attract the good things in your life, by having, generating and staying in that frame of the positive energy, positive vibration. And sometimes, it becomes challenging when you're trying to do that, just by sitting and trying to think good thoughts and trying to visualize good things. You can get up and exercise and do that in a sort of an indirect way. And exercise, it increases your feel-good hormones, because when you exercise, the parts of your brain that releases those hormones, they become activated. So the pituitary gland and the hypothalamus, they release certain hormones, one of which is endorphins. And, interestingly, endorphins got its name because it was discovered after the discovery, sometime after morphine was discovered. And morphine, we all know, is an amazing pain reliever. And then, the physiologist discovered that we actually have a substance in our body, a natural substance that has the same effect. It actually relieves pain. And that's why it's called endo, which is from within, morphine, endorphins. And so it helps to relieve pain naturally. But it also reduces your feelings of anxiety and stress very, very naturally and without any side effects. So it's like, besides being a natural morphine, it's like a natural Xanax. I'm not even sure what those calming medicines are called. But yeah, definitely. Endorphins are the ones that are reduced mostly when you exercise, but there are others that are released as well. Serotonin is one of those, and that's called your natural antidepressant, because that helps to relieve depression and to regulate your mood and to balance out your emotions and to kind of get you from feeling blah to feeling more excited and enthusiastic. And so serotonin is one of those that helps. And there are some other hormones that are released as well. But also exercise improves your general circulation in your body. So it just gets your heart rate up, gets your blood flowing to all parts of your body, and just helps you to feel more alive and awake and alert and more in control of your circumstances. And those are all the things that we're trying to do when we're practicing LOA, because the more alert you feel, the more empowered you feel, because you can take control of where your mind is going or is trying to go, and you can then be able to more determine what kinds of thoughts are predominating in your mind. But, you know, there are other things that happens when you exercise in terms of, you know, those are the immediate effects. There are long-term effects, and, you know, we're all aware of, you know, you're able to control your weight and just make yourself healthier in general. But exercise also increases the hormones, those natural growth hormones that helps when you're trying to reprogram your brain, especially. It involves actually growing new hormones and new structures in your brain, which happens throughout your life. We discovered, you know, there was one time they believed that after a certain age, your brain was pretty much finished growing, but now neuroscientists know that that's not true. Your brain continues to adapt and grow and change throughout your lifetime. And one of the ways that you can help that is by exercising. In fact, there are studies now that are showing that exercise is actually more effective than some of the antidepressants that people are being prescribed on a daily basis.
Okay, I'm sold. I mean, I have been kind of in a not so good space lately, so where do I begin? I mean, does it matter what kind of exercise I'm doing?
No, it actually doesn't. You know, as long as it's something that's fun for you, that you enjoy, that you find, you know, interesting and challenging, then go for it.
I want to start right now after hearing all that.
Yeah, I was thinking about the fact that I'm giving this wonderful talk on exercise, and it hasn't been that long since I woke up.
Yeah, I'm sitting here saying, okay, how soon can we get outdoors?
Exactly.
I guess we have to wait another 54 minutes because we have to finish the show. But after that, Zoom, I'm out the door.
Yes, definitely.
So exercise. So let's go through some of the I guess it probably matters to the degree of exercise. I mean, there are some people who are like super athletes who, you know, they get their heart rate up to 200 beats a minute or whatever, and they're going nuts. I don't think we're talking about that.
Right.
But we're talking about even the more sedentary forms of exercise.
There's always the disclaimer. Please, you know, consult your physician before you ask.
Yes.
But yeah, so, you know, it depends on your level of activity and your level of health. But, you know, walking, which is safe for almost anyone, is one of the best form of exercises that you can do. If you can get out and walk, or you can walk on your, you know, treadmill, whatever, walking. And, you know, walking at a moderate pace, swinging your arms and just kind of getting your legs moving, that is actually one of the best exercise that you can participate in. But it doesn't have to be, you know, like a formal exercise. You know, Louise is a gardener. Gardening is actually an extremely effective form of exercise. And not only that, it helps get you what we call grounded, because you get in there and you get into the dirt. And if you can, you know, I don't know how, Louise, if you wear shoes or not, but if you can do it bare feet, that's even better.
I know when one of the impetuses for starting the business was literally sitting in the dirt,
mm-hmm.
my butt in the dirt, pulling weeds. And I just loved being out there. And I knew psychologically, but probably had pushed it back into my recesses of my mind, that literally being on the ground, you mm-hmm. absorb and feel the energy from the earth.
Yes.
And it helps to replenish. And they've done scientific studies with autistic children mm-hmm. and literally having them lay on the ground.
Yes, it helps ground and center them. Yeah, definitely.
Right. And that old adage of go hug a tree. Well, an old growth tree puts mm-hmm. out a lot of energy.
It does,
I'm one of those people who going to walk in the woods re-energizes me, where some people get it at the beach.
Yeah.
I like the woods and the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And the earth, as we know, has energy fields.
Yes.
Of different vibrations, different intensities. Some places like Machu Picchu, and there are places in the southwest of the U.S. and other places around the world, I think Stonehenge is one of them also, that supposedly have higher intensity of energy fields, and people can often just feel them. not with, you know, without any scientific equipment that registers that the energy or measures the energy field, but that for me, physically being in the dirt focuses me. I'm not even aware at the time it's happening, but I will get up and I may be tired because of the energy I've exerted doing the gardening, but for some reason, as now we know, the energy that I've absorbed mentally and on a physical level, other than just tired, I feel better.
Yeah.
Probably because of the endorphins and the hormones that have been released through the activity, the oxygen that has been pumped through my system more so and better than when I'm sitting on the couch, so that every cell in my body has gotten more oxygen and in turn feels better.
And I'm sitting here thinking, oh my God, I'm married to a tree hugger.
Yes, you are. The older, the better.
So, Mark, what do you like to do? What's your favorite kind of activity to get the old endorphins going and get the serotonin streaming along?
Well, I, for most of my life, bicycle riding was the big thing. And I think it still is, just I haven't ridden one in a long time with all this moving around I've been doing.
Yeah, there was one point where you basically rode the entire Northeast.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was all over New England. It took a month to do it. It was great fun. But I can remember, you know, sort of linking in, talking of the energy of natural environments and all. When I was young, going on an early morning dawn bike ride with my buddy down the road, and we went out of town into the country, and it was just electric with energy. And I wasn't thinking at that age in terms of energy. I was just thinking, wow, it's just chilly and I'm happy. And, you know, I was just really enjoying that morning. I felt really alert and alive. And now that I'm older and looking back, I was thinking part of that's probably because of that, you know, getting out into the country, out into the woods, as it were. It was on a bike trail with lots of trees along the trail. And, you know, the wildlife is awake, and the birds and rabbits and everything. And
Little rabbits.
Yes.
Rabbits.
So the energy has played a big role in terms of your own experience with exercise and activity.
Yeah. Early morning is the best time, I think, to get some exercise.
Yeah.
I think for all four of us, dancing has given us that. We all have gotten into swing dancing and other forms of dancing. And I know for myself, back to, you know, rock and roll dancing, I loved it. I could dance for hours and not have to sit down. And then when I met Walt and he introduced me to swing dancing, just the smiles on my face, you know, while we were moving, I'd be concentrating because I didn't know the steps and I didn't know how to really relax and let Walt lead me. But even when I'd make mistakes or stumble or something, just the laughing, the smiles, waltzing just felt like being on a carousel, going up and down on the horses. And it just was an elating feeling.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do. I can spend hours literally dancing. And it's just, you know, it's one of the best exercises, but because it's so much fun with the music, you tend not to, you know, be counting the time passing and how many miles you're running and all that kind of stuff. I know for me, when I dance, I know I definitely release some endorphins because I can dance in high heel shoes and I don't feel it until I stop dancing.
Yeah.
That pain suppressant is working really well.
Exactly.
Right. And that's true of any kind of exercise that's a lot of fun for you, because when you're doing something that's fun, you don't pay attention to the effort,
right? Yes.
You know, until it's over with, and you're like, oh wow, I feel achy. But of course, by that point, it's usually a good ache.
Exactly. Yes. It's a good ache.
Walt's been a walker for many, many years, and when I started walking with him, he would walk the same path every day, and he would be in his head thinking things through and stuff. And I said, well, I can't do this. I need to be talking, or we need to go a different way, you know, each time we walk, or mix it up so that it's enjoyable, it's fun. Mm-hmm. And when we do talk, I forget about, you know, what I'm doing. It's not I'm out for taking a walk because I'm trying to lose weight or I'm trying to get my mood up or whatever. I'm just out having a chat with my husband and we're being outside, and I can generally walk farther. Give you an example. Many years ago, when I was in my 20s, went into New York City to meet my sister, and I was a lot slimmer and lighter weight than I am now, but I wasn't in great shape, but we got talking, and we got into a rhythm, and I don't know how well you know New York City, but we walked from Grand Central Station down past Soho.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, more than 40 blocks, and we were lucky we hit the lights pretty good, so we could just keep going. You keep me talking, and my mind off what exactly I'm doing, I can do it for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
Hey, Ilona, getting back to the medical side of it for a second, the serotonin, the endorphins, and so forth, how long does it take for them to kick into gear?
It takes about anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes. Doesn't take long. It starts, you know, studies have shown, yeah, that within about 5 minutes, there's an increase in the level in the blood. But, of course, the longer you keep going, you know, it takes about 20 minutes for you to kind of hit a nice, good burst.
So if you're starting out a new activity, you want to give it a good 15, 20 minutes before you give up saying, well, this isn't working.
Right, yes. You do okay. Want to give it at least 15 minutes, yes.
Okay, that makes sense. And then my other question for you is, you were giving us a wonderful presentation on what the scientific side is, and you mentioned that you like dancing. What else do you like to do? What are your favorite activities for getting the old endorphins going?
Oh, I used to be, I should say I still am, running. I just love running. I love running, and I think that's because I actually release more endorphins that way than any other activity, because I do experience the runner's high. You know, for me, it's sometimes when I haven't run for a while and I think, oh, I need to run. And within about, after about 10 or 15 minutes, you know, I would have planned to say, okay, I'm only going to do 1 or 2 miles. But after about the first mile, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this feels so good. I got to do at least 5.
Wow.
Yeah, and it just feels so good on so many levels, even during and after, you know, right after and, you know, like hours after, it helps me to sleep better and just feel so much better the next day and everything is just running, and it helps my digestion, my mood, just everything is benefited when I run, so I love running, yeah.
So I take it you're not like one of those runners that I see when I'm out walking, and inevitably, when I see these people run by, they have massive amounts of pain on their face. They definitely do not look like they're enjoying it. I take it that's not you.
No, not at all.
Yeah, because when we see them, it's like, why on earth are they doing this?
Oh, man.
They do not look like they're enjoying this one bit.
Yeah, hopefully they're just at the start and the endorphins haven't kicked in yet.
I don't know. Some of them look like they had worked up a pretty good sweat, so I'm not so sure. But I think that's why I picked walking, because walking is so much less stressful on the body.
Yes, it is, definitely.
And so it doesn't wear you out. I mean, yeah, you can get tired, but not the same way that running does. So you can do it longer and get the benefit longer.
Yeah, so the running is definitely low impact in that you always have 1 foot on the ground, so you don't like land that, you know, heavy on your feet. And so it can be, pretty stressful on your knees. But one of the things I, I'm very strict about, I do not run on concrete. I will not run on concrete.
Well, that's a good rule. Find a grassy spot or a park or something.
Exactly, yeah, or a trail or those what do you call those with the actual running track?
Running track.
Yeah, the running track that are, you know, made with the tar and whatever. Those have impact, yeah. But
yeah, even, I hear alongside the bike path and the walking path, they have a cinder strip for running on.
Exactly. And I make sure I have, you know, proper shoes and everything that I need to protect my knees, because it's, you know, it'd be pretty ineffective if I'm taking care of one part of my body and destroying another part.
Yeah, that doesn't work too well.
Right.
And it's even better if when you're running, you actually are smiling. That's the thing I always look for. I look for, usually in vain, I look for a runner who's smiling and enjoying himself. Yeah. And I've seen maybe two in my years of doing walking.
Yeah, I suspect a lot of runners just push themselves really, really hard for whatever reason, weight loss or whatever their goals are.
Yeah. Or they're getting ready for marathons or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was training for a marathon, I would always have music because I know that, you know, I would have long runs. I mean, I'm talking 6, 7, 8, 10 miles or so. And I would have music. And fortunately now they have all these different special packages of music that mixes for running. And, you know, I have those that incorporate the kind of music that I like, which is like really upbeat. I don't, you know, with the soca, the calypso, reggae, reggaeton, that kind of just music that you would normally dance to very vigorously. So I almost feel like I'm dancing in a way, because when some of my songs come on that I really like and the rhythm, the beat is really strong and heavy, you know, I just actually, you know, kick it up a notch and I run harder. So, yeah, the music really helped me when I was training.
Yeah. One more question about the running. If you're running, physiologically speaking, does it matter whether you're smiling when you're running?
I would think so. I'm not sure any research has been done on that, but I would just imagine that definitely, yeah, that would make a difference, you know?
So you can get more out of your running by showing on your face that you feel good about it.
Right. And even if you have to fake it for a while.
You know, that's been my experience. Now that I'm thinking about it, when I'm like out bicycle riding, if I am just going through and it's like, okay, it's time to do my morning bike ride or something, it's not as effective as if I just start smiling, you know, and start really enjoying the moment, you know, which isn't hard to do, but when I can feel the difference between when I'm not doing it, when I am doing it, it makes a big energy difference.
Yeah. And some people actually incorporate gratitude in their exercise, whether walking or running. And so while they're running, they're trying to think of things that they're grateful for. And they've reported that that has helped them, you know, feel better, even, you know, during the exercise and be able to exercise for longer. So, yeah, it does have a physiological effect, your state of mind.
Well, I know last year, I don't remember if it was March or April, I got my bike out, because one of the things that I'd said to Walt about moving back here was I wanted to ride the bike path. And for those of you who are new to the show, don't know that we are very fortunate, the apartment complex we live in, the bike path runs right across the front entrance, so we don't have to go far to get to the bike path.
That's awesome.
And the first day I went out, I did 12 miles.
Wow.
And I hadn't been on a bike in a long time. I mean, 10 years.
Wow.
Basically.
When she told me that she had done 12 miles, I wanted to check her pulse.
Well, I didn't ride really fast. But I got to certain points and it was like, oh, I can keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And I can keep going. And I finally got to one point. I think Walt called me or something. And I stopped at different points to drink water and just to rest a bit. But Walt called me. And so I took a little bit longer rest and I assessed a little bit more. And I was like, you know, I wasn't sure just how many miles it was because I didn't have my trail map with me. But I said, you know, I have to make the trip back. Mm-hmm. And I know there's some uphill places, so I better stop here and head back. And I got back and I felt good. I mean, I wasn't dragging. Oh, my God. You know, my legs weren't wobbly. I felt really good. And I felt really proud and excited about the fact that I had been able to go as far as I did.
Yeah.
And part of it was thoroughly enjoying feeling the wind in my face, being along our bike path runs through wooded and wetlands areas. I didn't see animals, but it was just nice to be out and enjoying nature. So I thoroughly enjoyed the whole trip.
Yeah.
What a concept. Exercise with moderation.
Yeah, the exercise is one of those amazing, amazing drugs, quote unquote, that we can use anytime for free without, you know, the side effects of mm-hmm. other drugs.
And it's comforting to know, because I've been through some kind of challenging times lately, and it's nice to know that just being able to walk out the door,
mm-hmm.
you know, once the snow is gone, but being able to walk out the door and just, you know, burn some energy up for a bit, if I can do that for 15 to 20 minutes, I can just turn my whole experience around.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, yeah. It was also last year at some point, we went out for a walk, and after the walk, I remember coming in, and I think it was one of my trash to treasure days that, you know, I had gotten some things either at a yard sale or the junk shop or something, but I wasn't sure what to do with it. And after I got home from that walk, I had ideas.
Yeah.
The ideas started flowing. And I had remembered either reading something or talking to you, Yuona, about how that exercise gets those, is it the synapses in the brain?
Mm-hmm.
That start growing and start more connections.
Right.
And I definitely felt, you know, I didn't feel it in my brain, but I felt in that, oh, I have ideas that
yeah.
I didn't have before. Great.
I have had that experience several times. So when I run without, you know, the technology, no music or headphones or anything, just running by myself in nature, it is amazing. And it doesn't happen to me if I'm, you know, inside a building on a treadmill, because usually there's like some kind of distraction. But if I'm running outside by myself, I usually get an idea, a new idea about something to do, or I get a solution to a problem. And I don't go out with the intention of doing that. You know, it's like,
right.
I don't even think about it. But all of a sudden, this new something, creative thought or a new thing comes to me. And, you know, it's really amazing how that happens every time I'm running outside in nature by myself and I'm alone, you know, with my thoughts. It just, it's almost like I'm free to now think of possibilities. And like I was saying, that makes it possible because, you know, blood is now flowing to all areas of your brain. New neurons come alive, synapses happen, new connections are made, and it really kind of helps you to. One of the things that exercise is described as being, it helps to flush your brain out. So when your brain is working normally, there are lots of chemical reactions, and sometimes in those chemical reactions, there's some waste that is being produced, some waste byproducts, and those can build up. And, you know, there's studies that show that those things can accelerate Alzheimer's and all kinds of neurodegenerative diseases and that stuff like that. But one of the ways that you can help flush your brain out is by exercising. Sleep is also very important for flushing your brain out of all the toxins and the waste products that happen as a result of normal brain activity.
Is that why I like naps so much?
Yes.
Well, we're due to take a break. Let's do a little brain flush of our own and then come back and talk some more about some of the benefits that
okay.
Accrue to us from doing exercise and activities of other kinds, too, because there are other activities that can have very similar effects.
Okay.
This is LOA Today here on PRN. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to LOA Today. Walt, Louise, Yuona, and Mark on this Thursday, April 2nd, 2015, talking about the benefits of activity and exercise when we want to get ourselves into a more positive mind space. And we were just starting to talk about being able to improve our brain levels, being able to get more out of our brains, more ideas coming just by exercising. And I know, Yuona, that's something that a lot of research has been done on.
Yes, absolutely, definitely. Because, you know, one of the things with neuroscience, you know, they're desperately trying to find ways to make the brain healthy, have longer life for the brain, but also how to maximize the use of our brain, because as we had talked about some time before, we know for a fact that most of us are not using our brains to the full potential. You know, there was that whole expression about we only use 10%, which is not accurate, but it does give an idea to the fact that it really, there is so much more that we can do and accomplish with our brains. And exercise certainly helps with that. You know, like I was saying, it helps to flush out the toxins, which we know with anything just kind of helps it work more efficiently and effectively. And it helps increase and improve the function of the neurons, it helps improve growth of neurons, the strength of the neurons. It helps blood flow to areas of our brain that may be suffering from, you know, reduced blood flow, which is, you know, what happens when you have a stroke where there is actually no blood flow. So to exercise helps prevent and ward off those kinds of incidences. You know, there's the famous story of how Einstein's brain was preserved. You know, it's a long story about how that happened. But they were able to take a look at it, and what they found was that he, among other things, you know, because everybody's interested in how is it different from the brain of a regular person, and they found that there were a lot more connections in his brain, a lot more neurons. And what we know is that when a child is born, up until a certain age, there are billions and billions of neurons, and there's the kind of a pruning that happens. One, it's just natural, and two, there's a lack of use of those neurons. They kind of go away. And as we age, we tend to use less neurons, and so they tend to die off, and we lose even more neurons. But exercise helps to preserve those neurons, you know, keep blood flow and oxygen going to them so that they can stay alive and healthy and useful for much longer periods of time. And so we can prevent some of the neurodegenerative diseases that is, you know, plaguing the older generation. So
not only avoiding degenerative diseases, but there's also the more positive side, which is you can actually improve your daily routine. You can improve your ability to do the things that you want to do most.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it helps, you know, especially with students, you know, and just, you know, they've shown that, you know, whether you're, whatever activity you're involved in, whether it's you're a business person or a scientist, whatever it is that you do, you can do it better if you exercise regularly. And that's a big thing, especially for students, you know, because, you know, the way our conventional schools are set up now, the students spend so much time just sitting at a desk in a room for hours on end, and they're realizing that that might not be the best way to get the most out of these students.
Well, yeah, because they talked about exercise or just play.
Yeah.
And that if you play first, then go and try and, you know, tackle some educational kind of piece, some math, science, whatever it might be, that people learn better, retain better. And I have a big issue with the fact that, like you said, the kids are sitting in a classroom most of the day. I know at daycare, the kids get a limited amount of time during the day out on the playground. They have to have a minimum of half an hour. And because of the way the daycares are set up, they don't have enough, some of them, I won't say all, some of them don't have enough play space for all the kids to be out at one time. So they have to take turns. So that minimum half an hour is also the maximum. That's all they get. And coming from New England, where, you know, they're inside all winter long, I'm the type that if it's a nice day, you're outside. You should be outside. And the other thing, too, is that so many parents set up the routine. You come home from school, you have to do your homework first. Oh, my God. I feel so bad for those kids because they've been in that mode of learning and sedentary for hours, they need to come home, have a snack, get out, run around, get some air, get their brain flushed, get the other parts of the brain stimulated, and then come back and do the homework. But parents are not aware enough, I think, and too afraid that, oh, if they go and play, then they come in, they aren't going to want to get their homework done, and they won't do it. When actually it's probably just the opposite. It will be easier, and the child will absorb and understand better what it is on that homework.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially in the era of the school bus. I mean, it used to be a lot more kids walk to school. That's right. Now gone.
Well, that's what I was just thinking about as Louise was talking. I remember, you know, because you were talking about how important play is and exercise. And I remember, you know, for the first 12 years of my life, there was really no distinction between exercise and play. They are always one and the same, because we, you know, we spent half an hour to 40 minutes every morning walking to school. And, you know, I walked with my sisters and my cousin, my friends in the neighborhood. So it was walk and play all the way to school. And, you know, if you got there early enough, you played until school started. And we had, you know, recess, you know, we had like two recesses in the morning and two in the afternoon. And then it was lunchtime. So it seemed like we spent most of the day playing, which was fantastic. And of course, you know, growing up in the tropics, there was no seasonal restrictions on that. So it was all year long. We played and played and played, and it just made school so much easier and so much fun, you know. And the thing was that you did that all the way up until high school. I mean, when we started high school, there was less recess. I think we only had two per day, but still, before school, lunchtime, and after school, we played. We played outside, like, you know, like a lot. And so that just helped us. So we didn't have to have these restrictions on us as well. And so, you know, there was not always, these hours for PE, quote unquote, because we spent so much time playing outside, just naturally, unrestricted, without, you know, any supervision. Whatever games we came up with, we did that. And it's so unfortunate that has not been the experience of so many students who go to school now.
But that lifestyle, and the one that Walt and I grew up with, where you walked to school, you walked home, that exercise and brain stimulation, I don't think anybody understood at that time, but it was built in. So you went to school with, you know, your brain ready, and you walked home so that you, okay, understandably, you walked home, you got some exercise, so maybe then you could sit down and pay attention to your homework.
Right.
But like you said, these kids were on buses, and some of them, oh my God, I know in Virginia, the kids would be on the bus for an hour because the county was so big that, you know, they were getting picked up at 7 o'clock in the morning. They weren't getting home till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but they had been on the bus for an hour. And most of the kids I know, even at daycare, the kids who were coming from the school, they would be asleep by the time they got to the daycare, because it had been such a long day. And I know when I got assigned the after-school program, they wanted us to have the kids do their homework, you know, as soon as they came in, have a snack and do their homework. I'm like, I knew at that time about the importance of exercise. I also knew, just not from a learning perspective, but just if you've been cooped up all day and you're a kid, and I know I was an energetic kid, I got to get outside.
Mm-hmm.
I got to run. I got to play. I got to scream, whatever.
Right.
But that was far more important at that time.
And kids who aren't allowed to do that, I think that can contribute to some of the issues of attention deficit disorders. When they've been sitting for hours, they rode the bus, they've not had any exercise, it's hard for them to sit again for the rest of the day and focus on, you know, the teacher in front of the blackboard. Exercise really helps you to focus, and people don't understand that, you know, and so instead they get medicated, which, you know, sometimes doesn't help the core of the issue.
Right.
I'm struck also by the fact that here, even in this conversation, we are talking, a few minutes ago, we were talking about the benefits of exercise in terms of staving off disease in older people. Mm-hmm. And then we're talking about stimulating better thought process, better mind working and so forth in younger people. Mm-hmm. We never really talk about stimulating better mind process in older people. It's like the only purpose of medicine for the older people is to keep them from dying.
Well, I think people middle-aged or, you know, from, say, 20 to 60, if that's the group you're thinking of, it gives us a better quality of life.
Yes.
And because we're physically healthier, our joints move easier, we're less prone to injury, we're more flexible, our brains are more stimulated, we're probably just better, nicer people to be around because we're happier. And us tie that in with the law of attraction. And maybe even if you're not aware of the law of attraction, if you're doing these things, that happens more naturally, so that you're naturally happier, more enthusiastic, seeing the positives in life, and are a nicer person to be around.
Yeah, I
am thinking about people who are middle-aged, but I was also thinking about people in the last third of life, and thinking about the senior centers I've been in and so forth, and the vast majority of people who live in those places or who spend time in those places are very sedentary. They don't do a whole lot, but there's this very, very small piece of the population that becomes active, and they're the ones you can tell just by looking at them which ones the active ones are. You can see it on their faces. You can hear it in their voices. They're the ones who are more mentally acute. So, I mean, to me, the biggest miss here is not talking about more than just the benefit of avoiding a dread disease, but rather actually having a great lifestyle when you're in the last third of life.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, you can tell those who are. And, you know, when they do the studies to look at the secret to longevity, as it were, and they, you know, go to places, different places in the world where the average age is, you know, the lifespan is longer. They found definitely, of course, there are things like, you know, the types of food that they eat and the culture and the environment. But for the most part, those people remain very active for long periods of their lives. In fact, in some of those cultures, and I think about places like in some of the islands of Japan, and there are like some remote areas in like Italy and other places where those people who have long lifespans, they don't have a concept of retirement.
Right.
You know, they tend to live long, very active lives. And so they keep active, you know, both exercising as well as being engaged, being involved, contributing to the society for most of their lives. So they're not relegated to a nursing home after a certain age. They continue to live with their community and they continue to be involved, whether it's you know, some of those places in South America, those people, of course, are raised, growing their own food all for, you know, well into their 80s and even 90s. You know, some of the islands, they're fishermen, and they keep fishing, you know, well, you know, at a very late stage. I know that one of the places that has a long lifespan is Loma Linda, California. And the people that they interviewed there who are in their 80s and 90s, they still, you know, ride their bikes every day. You know, they go dancing. They just really keep engaged and involved for a long period of time.
Community work and all that.
Yeah, volunteer work, community work. Yeah, that's true. Because there was a funny story, and you know, it's a true story about this lady who was in her 80s, late 80s, you know, and she had been volunteering and still keeping involved in a community. And, you know, they were asking her, you know, when are you going to stop? And she basically said that she's never going to stop because she, you know, they're like old people she has to help.
Right.
Well, part of what you were saying about with seniors, if you stop and think back when, gosh, when my aunt, who's been gone 20-something years, was elderly, they went into a nursing home. And nursing homes were horrible. People just sitting in the hall, basically sitting and waiting to die. And taking care of old, I won't say elderly, but older adults has become a brand new industry with the independent living, the assisted living, and the rehab centers, and even the senior communities that are built around golf courses.
Yeah.
They may be built around other activities, too, that I'm not aware of, but that's probably a multi-million dollar industry because we are living longer. People have money, seniors have money, and they want a certain lifestyle, and they still want to be active.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they don't want just to ride around on their bikes or in their little golf carts in their community. They want to be out playing golf, swimming, taking trips. I mean, there's a lot of seniors, even back when I lived in Vermont 30 years ago, the big thing was senior bus trips. People didn't have quite as much money to be able to drive themselves to Vermont from New York, New Jersey, D.C., wherever. But they would come on a week-long bus trip, and they were all seniors, and they were doing activities during the day, mostly sightseeing. But these are people who were not content to just sit in their rooms and watch TV or play shuffleboard. They wanted an active life. Also, for many years, there's been the, what do they call them? They're programs at universities generally during the summer for older adults.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Elder Hostel, is that what it's called? It's not the hostel where you sleep, it's education.
Okay.
And that there have been enough. A large enough population with enough money in that age to demand services of different kinds, and the environment or the businesses have come together to create things for them to do so that they can continue to be busy.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Yeah, a lot of universities, you're right, are offering courses for senior citizens, and you basically pay $50 for the entire course that you know can take in any subject. Yeah,
we've got about 8 minutes left in the show. I'd like to spend the last 8 minutes addressing the needs of people who were hit hard economically by the downturn and who, to one degree or another, are still hit hard, which actually constitutes a fairly significant, fairly large, and relatively silent proportion of the population. There are a lot of people who have been unemployed for months at a time, in some cases years at a time, people who are just struggling to get by financially, struggling to find work and so on and so forth. And their challenges are kind of unique. They're not dealing necessarily with a dread disease. They may be pointed that way with the way things are going, but they're not necessarily dealing with that immediately. They're not dealing with the challenges of a child who's in school. They're not dealing with the challenges of an older person who's at the end of nearing the end of life. They're in the middle. They're the ones who are the 30s and 40s and 50-year-olds. What particular pieces of information can we give to them to help them get past? Because they probably have the biggest challenges of all.
Well, that ties in with something I was thinking of, in that to exercise, as Yuona said, you can walk. You don't have to have any money. You can just go out and walk. But there are also resources available, like the library, which has videos, exercise videos, meditation videos, inspirational videos given by people like this that were featured in The Secret or of that nature. They have books on self-help and the power of positive thinking and law of attraction. Most people have, even people who are unemployed and below the poverty line, almost everybody has an iPhone. You can access the internet, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of videos there. I mean, we've made use of that to find some, what did we find? We found yoga videos, we found Zumba, we found a low-impact exercise video. They're even on cable TV. There are cable networks dedicated to yoga and meditation and Zumba and different kinds of exercise. So you can do that. Senior centers in a lot of cities, and you don't have to be a senior to go, I don't think, but senior centers have exercise programs at low cost.
Yeah, or free, some of them.
Yeah,
and centers and exercise centers, and you can go. You know, the pool is open, and even in a lot of the community centers that we're aware of, they have exercise, water aerobics, which is actually so great for you know, the you know, for anybody, but for mostly the older members of our society with the low impact, you know. But for everybody, there are lots of free classes, or you might have to pay a few bucks, you know. But they have, like Louise was saying, that I remember they have like some dance classes, they had yoga classes, they had Pilates, they had, you know, the Zumba, all kinds of stuff. They even have other things that you can get involved in. They had art classes, and they had, you know, basic computer classes, all these things that helps you get engaged, and they really are provided at almost no cost. And one of the things that that does too, not just provides, you know, the physical activity, but there's a social aspect.
Yes.
That's
yes.
So extremely important. Just like Louise was saying, when you, you know, when you're walking with a friend and talking, you find that you can walk and longer. There's a social component that is important, especially for our brain health. And that's why people who remain in contact with other people who have friends and are involved in the community, they tend to live longer, happier, more meaningful lives. And on a side, that's why in general women tend to live longer than men, because they have a more a wider, more engaging social circle than men for the most part, and it's found to be extremely important. And so they're encouraging more people to get involved. And like Walt was saying, those people who may have been hit by, you know, the financial situation, they need to find a way to get out and get involved, whether it's volunteering or just becoming a part of a group. You know, one of the things that I've used is the meetup.com, which is online, and there are, you know, list of groups that meet throughout all the cities in America for no money at all. You just, you know, you see a group advertised and you can show up to the meeting. It's open to the public and you get to meet people. And
we found a hiking group.
Yeah.
Joined them a couple of times. We found a drum circle group, which actually is exercise as well as fun.
Yes. Yeah. And that works wonders for the brain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we learned about and joined up with a boot camp group, sponsored by the city, I think, right?
Right, yes, exactly. And it was like these guys who were ex-military, and they were doing these drill-type activity. I mean, and it was awesome because it was high impact, but it just, you know, we could only do it once a week, because after that, the next day, you were like, oh, it's
But it's fun because everybody's really charged up and happy, and they, you know, their enthusiasm is infectious,
yes,
which helps a lot.
Yes, they motivate you a lot, yeah.
And that social aspect, you never know who you're going to run into that, you know, may know about a job or a housing situation or a connection that moves you forward out of the stagnated, depressed financial situation that you're in. I mean, I've learned through the years, if I have a need, be it something like, you know, a bicycle, or I'm looking to find a job somewhere or an apartment or whatever it might be, I bring that up to whoever I'm talking to, because you never know.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago when we lived here in Simsbury, I was talking to my upstairs neighbor about needing a place to store a second vehicle, a third vehicle, because I'd started my business. I had a truck. I also had my car. Walt had a car. We were only allowed two vehicles in the parking lot. And I just mentioned it to my upstairs neighbor. And she says, well, I have a friend who lives basically around the corner. And I think she has half of her two-car garage that she's looking to rent. Well, this person wasn't advertising it. But the universe puts people in your path. And I've learned to speak about what it is I'm thinking, wanting, needing, because invariably I'm, through the people I talk to, I'm led to exactly what I want or what I need.
So with about a minute left, let me do a little summary here, particularly aimed at people who are perhaps hit economically. Maybe they're dealing with family situations that are depressing. But if you're in that space where you're feeling really bad, you're having a particularly bad day, the first thing you need to do is to try to find some way to get yourself into a positive headspace. And I think we all agree, probably the easiest way to do that when you're in that space is to get out and do something.
Yes. Just get out.
Find a way to feel better.
Do something different.
Because activity does work.
Yeah, move the body.
Mark, Yuona, Louise, thank you so much for joining me today. And we'll look forward to doing it again next week.
Absolutely.
Yep.
We'll see you all again next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.